I think you just have to take it for what it is, and Axel portrayed it exactly right. The data were collected, but not in a randomized fashion. It has certain limitations. I think what I take from it is there were no obvious, terrifically bad signal events, unless people were not reporting certain events. The data that were there looked fairly consistent with what we've seen on clinical trials, so that people in practice appear to be using the drug correctly and not in populations at high risk for VTEs or very high risk for perforation, for example.
Howard?
Well, I think there are a lot of complicated issues in addressing this trial, and the waters are muddied further by the BRIGHT registry. I mean, first of all, there are the clinical trial problems of how to interpret the data and patient bias and selection and all that, but also it's inadequately defined as to what progression on bevacizumab is. We don't know if it's the first case that you talked about or the second case. You really don't know that in the BRIGHT registry, and we don't even know what progression means when we're talking about a biologic anti-angiogenic agent. Usually, when we talk about cytotoxic therapy and we say progression, we mean the tumor is no longer responsive, the drug, you know, it's refractory, we shouldn't use that drug anymore. We're talking about an anti-angiogenic drug here that may actually increase drug delivery that could work better with any chemotherapy. We don't know if there's any resistance to that mechanism from these data. So there are serious clinical design questions and the necessity to define better what is meant clinically by progression. And then there are a lot of biologic questions that need to be addressed in approaching this also.
Neil?
Something that has always struck me when I've seen these data presented relates to the magnitude of putative benefit of the continuation of Bev. The survival difference between the group that got continued bevacizumab and those that didn't is much larger than the improvement in survival or progression-free survival than we've seen with any new drug ever in colon cancer and probably any other disease other than GIST. And so that sort of raises a red flag for me that there might be unmeasured variables that you alluded to that might be contributing to the observation.
And I can tell you, one of my concerns when I saw the data initially was exactly that. I said, this can't be true. It's too good to be true. And so we tried to make the data look as bad as possible. We excluded all good patients from one arm, from the BBP arm, and still the effect was maintained. I mean, and I can tell you that Dan Sargent and I were really tried to criticize the data from left and right as much. We made the data look as bad as possible, it still held up. Having said that, again, there might be a confounding factor that explains something about this. But biologically, what I'm a little bit concerned about is data coming out of preclinical studies that when you withdraw anti-VEGF therapy of rapid regrowth of tumors, that's a very consistent effect that we see. Do we make our tumors addicted to anti-VEGF therapy? We're starting, it works, but then we can't withdraw it. I mean, again, we have no clinical trials so far that would have ever addressed that. E3200 second line, we didn't see this magnitude of benefit, even in bevacizumab naive patients. Why would that be less than what we see here?
It's one-fifth.
Exactly, it's one-fifth. So I have the same question. Why is that?
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense, but does everything we know make sense?
Yes. We
no.
just haven't figured it out.
So, Axel, are you saying those who didn't get continued bevacizumab actually did worse because they got drug withdrawal?
That's one of the theories. At least we have some data
but
for that
data
experimental
data. I mean, their survival and all that don't really look worse than you'd expect.
Rich?
I mean, 19.9, it's not great.
But it's not.
It's nice, but it's not optimal right now.
So as you may remember, I was the commentator on 13 abstracts in 10 minutes
right,
at ASCO, and Axel's BRIGHT trial was one of the things I had to comment on, and the way I approached it was to do questions asked, questions answered, questions raised, and my feeling was I asked the question rhetorically, should this change clinical practice, the BRIGHT registry? And I answered that no. And then I asked the question, will this change clinical practice? And I answered that probably. Now, having said that, it hasn't changed my clinical practice. You asked me to give you an example of a patient in which I've continued bevacizumab past progression, and I don't have one. And part of the reason for that is that I work in an institution that takes care of a lot of uninsured people. And I sit there and say, well, am I going to give the insured continuing bevacizumab and not give the uninsured continuing bevacizumab? That's a real problem for me ethically. And so I've just decided that until we get the IBET results, and IBET is just beginning to enroll, so it's going to be some time, I'm just not going to use bevacizumab continuation.
And I'm going to ask Axel in a second to give an example from his practice about this question. But getting back to IBET, Rich, you know, in breast cancer for years we had this question with trastuzumab. We tried to do studies, we could never get it done. Do you think IBET's going to get done? How does it appeal to docs and patients?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, did Axel shoot himself in the foot? Because he had had the idea for IBET well before it opened and well before the BRIGHT Registry was published. And I don't know how IBET's accruing, but my suspicion is that you need to pay attention to your shot foot.